Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Kelly.
Okay, that was like a very massively non-enthusiastic, hey, Kelly.
hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mitch.
Guess what?
What?
We're still
stuck in. Wow.
I think it sounds silly when we do it together.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Kelly. All right, let's do it for real. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, go.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, are we still stuck in Texas?
We're still stuck in Texas. That is right.
Damn the luck.
So real quick, I just want to pull the curtain back a little bit.
What kind of curtain is it? Is it like meat curtains?
This isn't live. It's not vulgar. You know, we're a PG, sometimes PG-13 show. So we got to keep
that
it clean.
That may change today.
Okay, basically, you're listening to this episode January 23rd, when in all actuality, today for us is December 28th. So when you listen to that one episode about how to keep Billy from tearing ornaments off the tree, I realize it was the middle of January. We're figuring our schedule out. So with that being said, I want to wish everyone a happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Right. I hope you're preparing for Valentine's.
But what we're going to be discussing today is not about any of that. Well, here we are. It was Christmas. My wife died for a short period of time. Then our plane caught on fire as we were flying home. But other than that, very uneventful holiday.
Mitch, you know these things usually happen in threes.
And then I had to go back to work.
Oh, well, obviously, the apocalypse is coming.
So that was the three. How was your holiday?
It was awesome. My parents came down from Amish land. They didn't bring the horse and buggy, though.
So how did they get? Did they fly? Is that?
They still drive. My dad is in his 80s, and he drove straight through 22 hours.
Yeah, that's insane.
He's like, oh, yeah, we're going to stop, but I feel so good. I think I'm just going to keep driving.
I don't trust an 80-year-old to drive 2 miles to Walmart.
You've not met my dad then.
Well, I hope I don't meet him on the road sometime.
He's a badass.
Last night, you sent me notes.
I did.
For today's episode.
This is something new we're going to try where we actually remember what we said in the last podcast and address it.
I'm just now reading the notes as we sit here. So, which would you like to start with?
Let's start with Billy.
You want to start with Billy?
I will be your Sherpa because I have almost 2 decades of parenting experience.
Well, this was the topic that I had for you. It was, how do we teach Billy how to share?
I feel like this is coming from a specific incident.
Yeah. She had a cookie, and I wanted a bite of it. And I said, Billy, can Daddy have some cookie? And she said, no.
That's fair.
And then we tried to teach her that it was important to share. And then she started crying and ran away with the cookie.
Yeah. Man, you may not be raising a girl who can share, but you are raising a brilliant woman.
Well, yes, strong, independent, fight the power, damn the man. But I want her to be kind. And so, you know, we tried to, like, show her that what sharing was. I'd be like, hey, look, Daddy is sharing his thing with Mommy.
Right.
It makes us feel good. You should try to share it. It makes us happy.
Modeling the behavior is the best way to teach sharing. However, kids don't understand sharing until they're about 3.
Okay, but my child is advanced.
It's true. She should absolutely be. You just think about it. Like, sharing is part of socialization, right? You want them to have that skill by the time they, whatever, go to kindergarten or preschool.
Right.
But in the moment when she has something that's dear to her, like a cookie.
Yes.
That's a hard sell. You got to start off with something less lovely. And may I say, it was probably one your wife made, and she's a pastry chef.
Yeah, it was, as a matter of fact. But here's the problem I feel, is that I feel like we're regressing in certain behaviors. You know, like, she's been very kind. When we would take her to the babysitter who had a kid, if she had a toy, she would give the toy. While she was eating, she would constantly, like, hand food to us to eat with her. But it seems like since we hit around 19 to 20 months, which she's now heading into the 21st month, she's become a little defiant. And dare I say, mean at times. And it's one of those things where we stop ourselves from laughing because it's kind of funny, but also it's like, I don't want you to be a jerk. So,
yeah, because you already have one person in the family who says mean things to get laughs.
Yeah, and I don't want her to be like her mother.
I think you're doing it right. I think it's also important, you know, you're going to teach her how to share by modeling the behavior, and you guys are very giving people, and you want to inspire her to share, but you don't want to push. I think that's kind of what happened with the cookie.
Yeah, I also don't want her to be a pushover. So I think that's something that's important to also teach is, like, share with people who deserve to be shared with.
Right, judge everybody.
Everybody. It's not Easter.
Also,
I bet Hugh Hefner judged everybody.
Oh, he did.
Come on now.
Probably in bed.
You crack yourself up sometimes.
It's important to teach your child that it's okay to not share some things. Like, some things that you have, it's okay to not share those.
Right.
Like, let's say...
Cocaine.
Well, you should probably share that.
Only if someone put in on the back.
So, like, if Billy has a favorite toy that she loves a lot, you don't have to teach her to share that with just anybody. She should only share it with who she wants to.
Okay.
Like, that's as important a lesson as learning how to...
And what does that... Other than the only thing that's really coming to mind for me is, like, you don't want this to get damaged, so don't just let anybody play with it. But I'm sure there's another aspect to that.
Yeah, there's a ton of aspects. Like, you're not teaching her socialism. You're teaching her sharing, right? And there's things that you are not going to want your daughter to share with everybody.
Okay.
Eventually.
Are you talking about her body and love?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's just as important, I think, to teach your child that it's fine to...
This stuffed animal is representation of something much more serious than you could ever imagine right now. Do not just go throwing it around town, letting anybody all willy-nilly play with this stuffed animal.
You make sure that that person is going to stay with you before you share that bunny.
And make sure that they're clean, they've washed their hands.
You make them show you test results first. Yeah, but it is absolutely, I would start with lower stake things. You're modeling the behavior,
right.
And then you can make it into a game where you share.
Well,
and you can name the game.
It's funny because my wife and I, we drink coffee.
It's delicious.
And occasionally we drink alcohol.
That's a good time to teach that we don't share everything.
Well, and I wonder if maybe by not letting her have our coffee or have a sip of daddy's beer, if that is where her being like, well, look, I couldn't have that stuff, so you can't have this cookie right now.
Are you saying, like, this is daddy's special drink?
No, I just say, hey, you can't have this. This isn't for you.
Okay.
Or, you know, I might tell her that it's for adults or something. But yeah, I don't think too heavily into the reasoning behind it since she's two.
Right. I would just use certain keywords because you're modeling, right? Mm-hmm. Just start low and raise the stakes.
Okay.
You can't start with cookie.
Right.
That's deer.
Okay. I got you.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, and I'm sorry that she didn't share your cookie with you.
You know. Ultimately, I'm bigger and stronger, and if I really wanted the cookie, I could have taken it from her. So I'm not too upset. I actually came out being the better person in this, which I think is important.
You are definitely the bigger person.
So, okay, look, I don't know why this has got to be a fat joke all of a sudden. All right, so just model the behavior. Hope for the best. It's going to take another year or so before she...
understands it.
Kind of gets it.
Right, because sharing is a
caring sign.
Sharing is a sign of empathy. Sharing is caring.
Yes.
It's 100%
true. She's very egocentric in her mentality, and that's just a part of development.
Yeah, biology and science and a whole bunch of classes I didn't do great in.
Okay. All right, well, I feel like we got that figured out.
Now, Mitch, you have 18 years of comedy experience.
Yeah, that's about right, I think. I don't know. I think it's 16, but...
You have 43 years of comedy experience.
I've been doing it for a while.
You've been comedying for a long, long time.
Yes.
16 years. My goodness.
You'd think I would have had more success.
Wow. So you have to be my comedy Sherpa and walk me through this.
Okay. You know what I've been wondering lately, though?
Do.
You know, podcasts have a certain level of popularity these days. Sometimes I come in and I do morning radio with you on 104.7 The Bear.
The Bear.
In Wichita Falls.
Rawr.
104.7 The Bear. Where do you think we have more listeners? Because terrestrial radio is kind of not as popular as it once was. And we did have like over 100 listens on the last episode. So I feel like we're kind of starting to level out.
Big shout out to my Uncle Don. He absolutely listened.
That's awesome. Yeah, I had a cousin that listened to it. Like I said, in many episodes,
I think our success may be linked to how big our families can grow.
Yes. If you're listening to this, the next time you see me, let me know what you thought, because I know that we're friends. Anyway, yeah, so 16 years of comedy, and I feel like I just now got a good idea for a podcast, so I'm helping you learn comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Develop into one of the greatest comedians in Wichita Falls.
Yeah, what a challenge.
I believe for Christmas you even received an award.
That was the most badass gift ever. Mitch and his wife had a plaque sent to the house that said, Best New Comic of the Year, Wichita Falls.
I mean, I was the one who determined that. I mean, I guess my wife and I together determined it. But I think if you look at the up-and-coming comedians in Wichita Falls, yeah, it's pretty much an undisputed title at this point.
You're making me feel all warm and fuzzy inside with that roaring endorsement.
So I don't know how much I have to teach you, but you obviously have some stuff here for us today. So
you set me on a curriculum. You told me to make a set list for my next open mic. I did. And honestly, I just completely ripped off a set that I'd already been building, but put the titles.
And that's fine. I mean, that's pretty much what you were going to do.
Right.
And because I've seen, so here's kind of the test for this, right? Like, I've seen your set several times. So give me the set list with the titles there, and let's see if I can kind of figure out which jokes they are based off of those titles.
The Worthless Mudbutt Prelude.
Okay, that is you value worthless things, like your children, for example. Your husband having to... Nope, you said Mudbutt Prelude?
It's just the prelude, so I just value worthless things, like my children. And then I talk about my kids in the next two, Pansexual and Jergens.
But what's the Mudbutt?
It's coming.
Okay.
That is my husband. Then it's Thanksgiving and Mudbutt, which are strongly tied together.
Oh, wait, are you still reading the titles?
Mm-hmm. The two about my kids, Pansexual and Jergens.
But don't say the two about my kids. Give me the actual titles.
Pansexual.
Pansexual is your daughter's orientation.
Jergens.
Jergens is your son has the athlete's foot.
Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, Mudbutt.
Yep, okay. That's your husband had to pull over on the side of the road and take a poop.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all been there. Next one is...
More than some.
We're keeping the tree.
Okay, that's you decorating your old tree, not wanting to get rid of it because you'd feel like a hypocrite because you don't want anyone to get rid of you. And now that you're a little older and some of your tinsel isn't as shiny as it used to be.
My tinsel looks good, baby. And then I close with the Bible store.
And that's Adam and Eve. Your husband got you a butt plug.
Wow. Just spell it out. Didn't you say we were PG?
Hey, I didn't say anything. That might have been verging on the PG-13. That's a great set list. You could lay that card down on the bar stool or whatever. It wouldn't be a distraction. You can look down, follow along where you're supposed to be. I think that's solid.
Unlike my husband's bowel movement on the side of the road.
Was it a wet one? If it's mud butt, I guess it was.
It was not a solid hanky.
Oh, man. That is unfortunate.
Okay, the next thing you wanted me to do is group the jokes that I'm confident in into group one. That was pretty much everything I just said.
Okay, and then I'll agree with that list. I think those are your more confident jokes. And then give me your group three first, which these are the ones that are not working at all.
Right.
Then give me your group two, and I'll tell you whether I agree with you or not.
Okay, group three is what I'm working on currently.
Okay.
It's a shit show.
Okay. So more stuff about your husband having to pull over on the side of the road. Okay.
And group two is the stuff about my husband not wanting to marry me.
Okay, I'll agree with that because I don't know what you're working on right now. I don't think I've seen any of it yet. But wanting to go on this all-inclusive resort and get the marriage ceremony that is included in it, I think is a great topic to hit on.
For all those listening who are not related to me, my husband and I are heading up on our 25th wedding anniversary, and we're going to an all-inclusive resort where my husband will not marry me.
I think we may have actually played one of your open mic sets earlier.
Right.
That had some of that material. So
it's true. And it has gotten better, but it still needs work. It's still not good.
Okay. Let's not say it's not good. Let's say it's not where you want it to be yet.
That's very kind.
And can you give me any kind of information on the group three stuff that's not working yet?
Yes. Which will segue beautifully into our next topic. You told me to make an observation last week. I did. Then you told me to watch Kyle Kinane's World Largest Pizza and Jim Gaffigan's Hot Pocket.
Right.
So watching those two comedians, their style is so massively different.
Right.
From how I present anything that I'm talking about.
They're also very massively different from each other, right?
Like, yes.
Like, Kyle Kinane is just kind of talking and telling his stories. Jim Gaffigan has, like, a side character voice that he throws in.
Hot Pocket.
But, yeah, but it's not even that. Like if I was Jim Gaffigan right now, I'd be saying what I'm saying and then going, she must think I'm crazy.
I love that.
Like, he kind of narrates his jokes in, like, Why would he say it like that? It's a nice little gimmick that he had that kind of lets the audience in on a little bit of his internal monologue there.
I think it sees into the audience's thoughts, and then they laugh because that's actually what they're thinking.
Yeah, I guess that's probably more accurate than what I said. I really guess there's no purpose for me being here anymore. But yeah, you're right, actually. I think that might be what it hones in on even more than what I was saying with his internal monologue. It may actually be that he's saying what the audience is thinking, and then they're like, oh, he gets me. He's in my head. So, yeah, I think you're right about that.
With Kyle Kinane, when I watched his set, it was, I don't know, maybe like 15 minutes. In the first, like, 5 minutes-ish, and when you watch this, you'll be like, that girl wasn't paying attention. But he was talking about reading Hemingway. I don't know if he was just, like, humble bragging and self-deprecating at the same time, but it didn't, like, rein into the rest of the bit. The funny part, the closer for him, was the pizza, and it was hilarious.
Really? Kyle Kinane is I don't want to say alternative comedian, but he's certainly more of a storyteller, kind of. You know, he's not very animated, I don't think. He's just like, here's what I'm talking about, and this is how it is. I was with a friend of mine, and he does impressions, and he's friends with Kyle, and we were at a festival together. Kyle is a very cynical person. My buddy sees Kyle, he's like, at this festival, it sucks. And Kyle goes, I get it. And then he turns around, he's like, hey, James, how's it going? And they start talking for a little bit, and James goes, are you going to watch any of the bands here? And Kyle's like, none of this is any good. And he goes, what, you don't like anybody? Like, you don't even like Mumford and Sons? And Kyle goes, Coldplay with banjos. Like, just nothing is cool enough or good enough in his worldview. So he's very cynical about the things that he talks about, I feel like. Yeah, but like Jim Gaffigan is like fun and joyful and, oh my God, like, I love Hot Pockets, but they make me poop a lot or whatever. Diarrhea pocket. You know, like it is two very different styles.
Both very much based in observation, so I understand why that was the assignment to watch. Also, when I cast this up on the TV, my mom, during the Jim Gaffigan set, she was just like, it doesn't matter what he says. Everybody just laughs.
That's a good point. I will say that this is like his most famous bit ever. I think probably for like a decade or more, he was probably closing out his shows with this bit. And then I think around 2007 or 8, somewhere along in there, a satellite radio comes out. It starts getting played on there over and over and over. And in fact, I went and watched him perform at a theater in Los Angeles around that time and fell asleep because it was the stuff I was hearing on satellite radio. And then he started coming out with a new set like every couple years after that. But by far, the Hot Pocket bit is what Jim Gaffigan was known for forever.
I listened to all of Jim Gaffigan's fast food. He put out a montage of all of his fast food stuff from all of his recorded specials during the pandemic. He was doing a lot of smushing like that.
Yes.
And it was fantastic because even though he had exactly the same style and you almost started to know what was coming, you didn't. And it was funny the entire time.
Well, you know, he wrote a book about food.
Called He would know.
Food, A Love Story.
Aww.
And I think it's just about his obsession with food throughout the years. But he's taken this thing that he loves, which is eating, and turned it into a pretty decent career. So was there one that you preferred over the other one?
I definitely enjoyed how much of a performance Jim Gaffigan gave while he was doing the Hot Pocket bit.
Yes.
But I was laughing my ass off at Kyle Kinane's pizza stuff. So I think I liked them both. I wouldn't say equally. I would say differently. Like the way you love your children.
So you enjoyed both of them. You love the pizza stuff by Kyle Kinane, but you really love the performance by Jim. So in Jim Gaffigan's set, were you able to count or be like, okay, that's a joke, that's a joke, that's a joke?
Yes.
Did you come up with a number at all?
I didn't count like that.
No?
Uh-uh.
Okay, and what about Kyle Kinane?
I felt his kind of hit harder. They were more punctuated as far as that goes, because every one of his observations was funny.
Right. So you think Kyle had more identified tags?
Yes.
Okay. Was each one like a declarative sentence, or was it leading into like kind of a like an open thought, or were they like
he'd already done the thinking for you.
Da 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 da. Bam, and then that's the period or the exclamation point at the end of the sentence, and that's the joke.
Yes, his periods were his end.
And I'm taking these questions in this lesson from John Roy's old Tumblr. So he gave this free class online, and I'm using this to help us with this lesson plan. How does Jim Gaffigan feel about Hot Pockets? Like, were you able to walk away from that and feel like you knew what he thought about it?
Yes, he has a love-hate relationship with them, and it's, I think, how he feels about a lot of food.
And what about Kyle Kinane with the giant pizza?
I think his comments were more about the absurdity of the giant pizza.
Right.
So his
is more about, like, why would someone do this? He's not talking about the pizza's effect on him or his desire to eat the pizza. He's just like, someone made the world's largest pizza and it's pointless.
Well, I think really it's about the flyer and all the information that they got across in the flyer. His whole set was based off of this little whatever piece of yellow paper or whatever that came to his apartment.
Okay.
So I don't know that he's ever eaten pizza from this pizzeria.
Well, yeah, I don't expect that he did eat the world's largest pizza.
I don't know that he's had any of their pizza.
But
can you contact your friend and have him reach out to Kyle and, you know, find out that information?
I don't know if that would be the most appropriate use of my friendship. Especially since this is probably a 15-year-old bit that Kyle may not even remember doing. Again, he's a very cynical person. So if someone called him up asking about a 15-year-old bit, he'd be like, oh, why don't you find something better to do with your time instead of asking me stupid questions?
I was thinking about ordering a pizza.
Yeah, and I need to know if I should order the world's largest pizza.
Like, if I get this, do I want a 4-foot round pizza of shit pizza?
Is that what you took from it, that it was a very large, shitty pizza?
I don't know if it was shitty or not. I know that it was large. But the thing that I loved most about Kyle's set is he starts off talking about this large pizza that's around $50. And he's talking about it. He's like, that's absolutely absurd. Then he goes into talking about the 4-foot huge pizza.
Okay.
And then at the end he goes, it makes that $50 pizza seem reasonable. And that shit cracked me up because I've done that to myself. Think about buying a car.
Right.
You go in and you're like, oh, I'm getting the $14 Domino's car. And then you look at the high-end cars and then you're like, oh, I could get a Maxima. So it's like an upgrade but not all the way. So I've been there. And also, I want a $50 pizza.
I think it's pretty telling that you can think of buying cars the same as you think of buying pizza. All right. Okay, so with what we've seen with these two guys, they took two premises and had some pretty long, significant bits about it broken down into, like, different minor topics, right?
Yes.
So for you, I think one good thing to look at would be your category two of jokes.
Right.
This is you and your husband going on an all-inclusive trip and you want to get married. And there's a whole bunch of things that you can talk about in the vacation, in the resort, in the wedding thing. Like, you can take this large subject.
Right.
And then break down each thing into it, like what's the overarching premise, then what are the individual premises, and how do you feel about each one?
Okay.
Right? So I think you usually start the joke off with you asked a man to marry you recently, and he said no, which made it doubly worse because that man is currently your husband.
That's right.
Right. So the overarching premise right here is, you want to get married a second time to your current husband.
That's my thesis statement.
Right. The things that you're breaking it down into are going to be that, you know, this isn't some grand thing that you're looking for. It's a freebie.
Right.
The all-inclusive thing. You got the reasons why your husband doesn't want to do it. The very petty reasons why you do want to do it.
Wow, I feel like you've taken sides.
no, I'm just saying, like, these are funny things. Your husband doesn't want to do it because he's a man, and he thinks you're already married, so it would be pointless to do it again.
Yes.
You want to do it because all of your friends have had more than one marriage.
Yes, they have.
And you're competitive, so even if it's to the same guy, you want at least two marriages under your belt. And then there are the things that would be involved in this wedding on the resort. There's just a bunch of different things that you can tackle in this bit. And so I think by watching those videos, not necessarily going for the observational tone of it, but looking at how they take a big topic and then break it down, I think we started the show off. You said that was your category two, where you like that material, but it's not where you want it to be yet. And I think you can learn from what Kyle and Jim Gaffigan did by watching them and kind of apply that to the joke writing process of what you have started so far.
Okay.
The other thing about this, right, was for you to create some observational humor.
Right. The actual assignment was jokes from observations.
Right.
So when I started diving into this, I decided to stick with just the one observation, which was the billboard I saw in Tulsa, which said strangulation, and then under it in parens, choking is deadly. That's all that was on the billboard.
Okay.
And the other observations I had were just about aspirational purchases and aspirational advertising, which I'm not opposed to going back and looking at a later date. But I went so far down this rabbit hole.
On the strangulation is deadly?
Uh-huh. That there was no coming back.
Well, that's good. You at least saw something that that it was so, whatever the word is I'm looking for, engaging in your brain. I'm sure there's a better word for that. You saw something that was so enrapturing. I don't think that's the word either. But regardless, you saw something that got your attention and you really dove deep into it.
I did. So strangulation, choking is deadly. And I kind of brainstormed, what could this possibly be about? And I was wondering, it was in Tulsa. Could this have been something with professional wrestling where they're accidentally choking people and killing them?
Now, I will say that is a good comedy reason. I think that it has to do with domestic violence.
Domestic violence did make my list. I also thought, well, it was Tulsa. It could be about lynching. Have you heard about the Tulsa Massacre?
Oh, yeah, that's a possibility. They talked about the Tulsa Massacre on The Watchmen.
I thought that this could possibly be advice and not a warning that strangulation is deadly. You know, like for hitmen that are out there.
If you have a problem to solve.
Right, strangulation.
You don't necessarily have to buy a gun and cause the government to come take away our Second Amendment rights. Just use your hands.
They're apparently pretty effective. It's deadly. And then there was the thought that that it's sexual. Like some people really like to be
choked
while they're having intercourse.
Right.
And then there is, of course,
what a bunch of weirdos, right? Who would?
Mitch, what's on your neck?
Who would want that? Wearing a turtleneck.
Stop. Why are you wearing a scarf over a turtleneck? My goodness.
You know, that's one thing a cold spoon won't get rid of around your neck.
And then, of course, I had to push it a little bit further. So not just sexual choking, but autoerotic asphyxiation.
Ah, yes. I believe I mentioned someone on the last episode. And
David Carradine.
And you were like, we shouldn't mention death.
We shouldn't. And then that's all it's about. That's everything I looked at was about death.
Okay.
So obviously, what I found most interesting and what I wanted to pursue most was asphyxophilia, which is what autoerotic asphyxiation is.
It seems to me like autoerotic asphyxiation is a pretty good enough scientific term, but they have to give it a more scientific term with asphyxophilia.
Asphyxophilia. It's really fun to say.
Yes.
It's like hippopotamus.
It sounds like a crime, though.
It does. And honestly, asphyxophilia and hippopotami, both deadly.
The hippopotamus is the most deadly animal in Africa.
They are bastards.
Yes. They may look cute and cuddly, but they will eat you.
They do look cute.
Have you ever seen a baby hippopotamus?
This is where the trauma comes from. I was watching a documentary, and there was a baby hippopotamus, and some big man hippopotamus.
Okay, I don't even want to hear the rest.
It's not pedophilia. It's hippoponophilia. Yeah, you were talking about David Carradine. He was in Kung Fu. He had a pretty...
Kill Bill?
Was he really?
He's the main guy in Kill Bill.
I had to look
away. He's Bill.
Is he really?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
I couldn't watch that movie. It was so gory. It was as gory as watching a big hippopotamus chomp a baby hippopotamus.
You were going to get it out one way or the other, weren't you?
That's what she said.
I didn't say pull it out. Okay, continue with your fascination with David Carradine's masturbatory practices.
Well, this led me down a rabbit hole, and of course I found some interesting articles about various celebrities who have succumbed to what is considered accidental suicide.
Okay.
Through asphyxophilia.
You would think it would end at one.
Right? No. In fact, this has been going on for a really long time, and this is probably the most messed up story, so let's just skip to it.
Okay.
Way back in the 1700s, there was this dude. This is the first known autoerotic asphyxiation death. His name was Frantisek Kotswara, and he was a composer, so he was artsy. And his most famous work is called The Battle of Prague. Mark Twain was a huge fan of this piece.
I wish we had a radio license so we could... Wait, do you think it's in the public domain?
It's from the 1700s. You would think it would be.
Okay, let's cue it up real quick. You ready?
Yep.
Have you listened to it?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, this is the Battle of Prague. It does sound like something that you would have playing in the background as you tighten the belt around your neck and you slowly squeeze the gerents onto your hand as you prepare. I feel like this is probably what you're hearing as the blood is getting cut off.
So that brings up a big point that people who are into any kind of autoerotic asphyxiation derive a sense of sexual arousal from a lack of oxygen to the brain.
Right.
So this dude, Frantisek Kotswara, the dude who did that song, went to, let's say, a working girl.
Okay, a prostitute.
And he offered to pay her 2 shillings. I don't know what a shilling is. I think it's money.
It's like a dollar, we'll say. But probably in that time, it was probably worth like, let's say it's $50.
Okay. He offered her 2 shillings to cut off his testicles.
Oh, boy.
She declined. I don't know if she was holding out for 4 shillings or if that was like an 8-shilling job or if it's like 2 per. And then he tied a noose around his neck and took up with her until he died of autoerotic asphyxiation.
Took up with her?
I was trying to keep it PG-13. He banged.
That's still pretty PG-13. So he tied a noose around his neck and started to have sex with her and then died. And she wasn't able to. I think this is a murder. I don't want to turn this into a true crime podcast. I think she killed him. And this is our first known story of a woman who killed a guy and made it look like suicide through autoerotic asphyxiation.
Because that was a thing.
I don't know.
And this is one of the weirdest things, too, all right? Before he died of this, like, he wanted to have his nuts cut off. And then another dude, his name's Albert Decker, he was... I think this one's murder, too.
What if it turns out there's never been an actual case of autoerotic asphyxiation? It's just everyone's been getting murdered, and this is how they've covered it up.
Listen to Albert's story. He was found in his home, naked, kneeling in the bathtub. That could all happen on your own. He had a noose tightly wrapped around his neck. You could also do that yourself. He was blindfolded. You could do that. His wrists were handcuffed. He had a ball gag in his mouth, 2 hypodermic needles in one arm, and his body was covered in explicit words and drawings in red lipstick.
What year was this?
68.
1968?
Yes.
Oh, boy. I mean, there was a lot of weirdos out around then. Just men with long hair smelling like patchouli oil. So who knows what actually happened there. You know what? I bet the cops walked in and then they were like, oh, this looks pretty gay. Let's just call it a murder and be done with it. Because back then...
Accidental suicide is like, what it's ruled.
The cops would see something that seemed gay, and they'd be like, I really don't want to look into this any further, so...
Suicide.
Probably suicide.
Yeah.
He's got a ball gag, and his hands are handcuffed behind his back, and he's got dirty words written all over him. Yeah, the guy obviously had some self-esteem issues, so... Yep, definitely wasn't anything homosexual going on here. So I once read a story about a guy in the 1700s that wanted someone to cut off his balls and instead just put a noose around his neck, just like this guy. I think it's the same thing.
Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah, that's it. They probably hadn't even come up with the term yet.
There are more terms for this.
Was this guy famous, though?
Yes, an actor and a politician. Albert Decker. And then the one who, like, blew my mind. Can you say that when you're talking about suicide?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
The lead singer of NXS, Michael Hutchins.
What?
He was found with a belt around his neck. And there's been talk, was this suicide or was this asphyxophilia? And his partner, her name is Pamela Yates, insisted that Michael died accidentally when a sex game went wrong.
Their popular song was Need You Tonight, right? Mm. I need you tonight. I need
but you're
you to,
not home.
I need you to untie this knot.
What's our safe word?
I think that would be it.
So I went down that rabbit hole, which I found fascinating. Way too fascinating. I felt a little dirty after exploring the autoerotic asphyxia.
Okay.
So I like went deep down into this rabbit hole of this autoerotic asphyxiation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually decided to do what you told me to do in the first place.
Right.
Which was figure out why the billboard was up.
Oh, okay. And what was the reason?
Domestic violence.
Oh, see, I was right in the beginning.
So obviously I've dug and dug and dug and found out we're at something where you're not allowed to make fun of it.
Well, hold on, though. Just real quick. I know you found a couple celebrities. Do we know what the number of people who die of autoerotic asphyxiation every year is?
Yes. In America, there's a number as low as 160 per year, but most experts put it at between 250 and 1,000 deaths per year in the United States.
Due to autoerotic asphyxiation?
Yes.
So let's just say it's 250.
Okay.
That means 250 people a year die from putting a belt around their neck while they jerk off. The number of people who actually just do it and survive has to be significantly higher.
Choking is deadly.
It is, but people are doing this as part of their normal routine. I thought it would be like 16.
There's so much shame around dying from autoerotic asphyxiation.
When people find the body, they
change it.
Some woman goes in and sees that her husband has done this, and she's like, oh, I can't let him go out like this. So she just chokes him with her own hands and goes, look, I killed him.
It's more like they
go
make
to
it
jail than people think that he died like this.
They make it look more like it was just
a hanging,
right, or a suicide instead of...
Put that belt back in his pants.
An accidental suicide.
Give me that rope.
Right. Oh, I was reading a scientific paper because I went deep. In Italy, they can't get any real numbers because there's so much shame and stigma around this particular topic. They're all just deemed suicide.
Oh, man.
There's scientists who go back, social scientists who go back and they look through all the suicide death claims and try to suss out how many of these actually belong in the category of autoerotic asphyxiation.
We can just say in this category from now on so you don't have to stumble over it. So
hard. So hard. Just like a person beating off with no oxygen to their head.
So then you look it up. And you find that the actual purpose of the billboard is domestic violence. Yeah. And you say at this point we've come to a place where we can't make jokes about it.
Well, right, that we probably shouldn't.
But did you attempt to?
Yes.
Because I've already figured out my joke. So I want to hear yours, and then I'll tell you what I came up with.
Experts say manual strangulation is the biggest sign domestic violence will turn deadly. Actually, I think the biggest sign is the billboard.
I think that's a very funny joke. Yeah. I think if you could maybe lead into it with, like, you were doing this research, you found out about that, which is, you know, leading you into a place where you can't make any jokes. I think it would be good to acknowledge the fact that you initially think that you probably shouldn't make any jokes about this.
In 2021, to somehow circle around to the fact that this is becoming a true crime podcast... Gabby Petito, she was 22. Do you remember her?
Yeah, the van. They were a couple going around in a van.
Yes, it was their van life journey. She was on like a four-month trip with her fiance. His name was Brian Landry. And he just like went back to Florida in her van without her.
And was like, I don't know what happened to her.
What could have happened? Right? And then they find her. And the cause of death was?
Strangulation.
His cause of death was a little more straightforward. He went off in the woods and shot himself in the head.
Do you think he was jerking off while he did it?
God, I hope so.
Oh, I hate trying to make a joke out of everything.
So the only thing I can think of is I feel like it would be horrible and hilarious to somehow work in there. Well, did he say he was sorry? You know, like this whole, like, people, you get choked a couple of times before you actually end up dead from it, statistically.
Oh, you mean, like, because that's the number one sign that domestic violence is going to turn deadly.
Right. But he said he was sorry. It's really fucked up for me to even be talking about this because I am married to 100% the best man in the world.
Well, I think my wife would disagree.
Potato, potato.
But what's the joke there with the did he? My joke would be.
Yes, do it.
So you start out by discussing the fact that about 250 people a year die from autoerotic asphyxiation. Then you go and you discover that the billboard is actually about domestic violence. My question would be, how many of those victims of strangulation also came at the same time?
That's so fucked up. Mitch, that's terrible.
It's kind of like the best way to go out. You know, they're like, oh, God, I'm going to die, but it feels so good.
Well, on that note, I don't really feel like we can get any worse.
Or any better. I'd like to see it that way.
That's really as offensive as you could possibly get.
But still get a good laugh. I mean, you gave me a pretty good laugh there.
As long as you're funny, right?
Well, shoot, one thing we need to just discuss real quick is that this is being recorded after you took part in a competition.
Well, you're right. We did do a competition.
Right? So we did a competition.
We did a competition.
You took part in your first competition. There were 10 people competing in the competition, and you actually finished?
Yes.
In what position?
It was a tie to begin with.
Four?
For first.
There we go. I think that my work here is done. This podcast is over. I'm going to teach my daughter how to share. This is like a mini series. It's a limited edition. Well, no, we have a lot more to do. But
I don't feel like you can tap out with what you just heard me say when my assignment was jokes from observations. And I talked for like 20 minutes to make a joke about a billboard.
You're right. I'm not leaving yet.
Thank goodness.
I do want to say that the person you tied with was a very funny.
So funny.
Veteran in comedy.
A lot of experience.
It was me.
Roughly 16 years.
But I'm not going to be able to take part in this anymore. So you're going to go back. This is a monthly thing that they do.
Right.
So you're going to go back to the one in January, and we're going to see, without my interference there, can you come out on top? I think what you have going for you is you're being more prolific than the rest of the people that do it. They're constantly doing the same thing over and over. We can probably take a couple things from your category two and category three to continue working on and take them and win that competition.
I would like to have new material when I go up.
I think that's absolutely the way to do it. First of all, I just want to say congratulations. Your hard work has paid off.
Oh, thanks, man. And yours.
For you to be able to, I realize this isn't the biggest market for stand-up comedy, but you are the newest person performing, and you beat all of those other people. You shouldn't judge your comedy based off of competitions, but I think it's a good way to really kind of gauge how you're advancing, at least. You want to do it to be true to yourself, and it is sort of an art form, so maybe a competition isn't the best thing to do, but starting out, I think it is a pretty good and fun gauge of your progression. I want to really look forward to you doing that in January and us seeing how well you do. As far as like an assignment moving forward, we're kind of done with some of the stuff that John Roy had. I think a new assignment for you, which is going to be a little difficult. So we're going to talk about this for the next couple of weeks. We need to find a venue. We need to start our own open mic or our own monthly showcase or something like that, where either we have a weekly spot that we can do comedy here in Wichita Falls, or we need to find a venue where we can do a monthly show. You know, we've met some people in Dallas and Oklahoma City, and I know people in Austin where we could bring people up and we could put on a good hour and a half show with about five comedians on it. So you are familiar with some of the places here in Wichita Falls. I'd like to see, kind of try and find a venue to, and I'll help you, but run either your own weekly open mic or a monthly showcase.
Okay.
Because the best way to get booked on shows is to book people on your show. I don't really think there's a good show going on here. I've been booked on two or three shows now that have been canceled. I've been on some shows that I didn't think were great. And so I think someone who's kind of motivated. I mean, if you told a venue that you are on the radio here and you want to do a weekly or monthly show and tell people on the radio to come to this venue and watch your show, I think that's going to help you out a lot with being able to get a venue.
This is the most daunting assignment that you have given me.
Which is why I'm not saying come back next week with a venue. Whew. We're going to go over it. You know, we have our friend Andrew who was doing that show at the Maplewood. And it didn't work out for him because he wasn't able to he's living 2 hours away.
Right.
So it wasn't something he could monitor and really work. Maybe we can talk to Andrew, see if he would be upset if we talked to him, and maybe we can work on getting a monthly showcase there. Or maybe we can talk to the people at Backdoor. Or maybe there's a venue that I'm not familiar with that what we have here in Wichita Falls is MSU.
Right.
It's Midwestern State University. There's a younger crowd there. If we could find something, like, where do they go hang out? You know, there's got to be somewhere where people who would be interested in this are going to be hanging out and be interested in going to shows.
And so I can continue my writing. What do you want me to write on? Give me some sort of topic. What do you sort of sit down with as a topic or a starter or whatever to start writing comedy if you're just sitting down to do that?
Well, like I said previously, I like to do those morning pages. It's possible that something comes into my head then.
Okay.
I'll just maybe jot it down in the morning pages and then go back later when I'm actually sitting down trying to write things out and be funny about it then.
Okay.
A lot of times I will just have an idea, put it in the notes of my phone. And then when I sit down, I can actually kind of dig into it and figure out, like, oh, this is what, like, trying to get out of it, what was funny and things like that.
Okay.
For example, the other day, I thought it was funny that I was going to the store to buy dirt.
Right. And that is funny.
And so I wrote down, you know, bought dirt.
Okay.
So then I'm going through, like, well, what's funny about that? Well, I think the fact that I told my wife, hey, I'm going to go to the store and buy some dirt. And then all she said was, okay. And didn't, like, go, why do you need dirt? Dirt? I'm constantly telling you to wipe the dirt off of your feet before you come in the house. I'm telling you to wash the dirt off of your hands. It seems like there's an excess amount of dirt just constantly following you around. Maybe Texas isn't the best place to make the comparison, but I compared it to going into a marijuana dispensary. Because you're going in there, you're like, hey, I want to buy some weed. And then they'll be like, okay, well, this weed right here will help you sleep. This weed will help you be creative. This weed will make you feel, you know, whatever. You know, they tell you this, all this dirt does different things and all this weed does different things, but ultimately, after I buy it, I'm just going to feel dumb. That's the ultimate thing. So, yeah, you know, I just had this idea that day, and then I was able to go and write about it and start kind of working these bits out. So you have your note app on your phone.
I do.
Where you have a funny idea, you jot it down. Then when you sit down outside of the morning pages, when you sit down for your writing time, your joke writing time, you just kind of break it down. Well, what's funny about this? And then where does this go? And then try and, like, find as many different things to do. Don't burn yourself out. Set it like an hour to write. You know, don't drive yourself crazy. Let's say you can't think of anything.
Okay.
Think about what time of year it is.
Okay.
Is there a holiday coming up? Is it a certain season? What's the weather like? You know, there's got to be something going on that you can write about. Look at the news. Maybe try and write something topical. You're on the radio every day. You can write some stuff that doesn't necessarily translate over into stand-up comedy, but you can use it on your radio show.
Right.
And then what that'll do, like when I was doing Punchline.
Right.
Which was a TV, like a panel show. We were writing jokes for news stories.
Okay.
What that does is you're just flexing that muscle.
Right, okay.
You're working it out, and you're asking yourself, what is funny about this headline? And you're making a joke about it.
Next week, let's talk about writing comedy for things that are topical versus things that are evergreen.
Okay.
And until then, we'll just be stuck in Texas.
Forever and ever.
Amen.
I want headphones.
You want headphones?
I never get headphones. I just would like to hear what we sound like.
You're hearing it, like, in real life, in real time.
It's not the same.
You're right. My headphones are amazing.
I have those same headphones at home for when I podcast on my own, which I haven't done since I moved to Texas. It's sad.
FYI, you may want to break them out. If they stay in storage too long, the pads fall apart.
And then you get little flaky stuff all over your...
All stuck to your face. You couldn't look more like a meth addict if you tried. Well, I mean, maybe you could. I don't want to downplay what you're capable of.
Well, we're here in Wichita Falls, stuck in Texas. There's plenty of good examples of what a proper meth head looks like.
It's like you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a meth head around here.
Ew, why would you swing a dead cat? Just bury it like a decent person. That's a bad saying. It's weird. It's gross. It's vulgar. I love it.